Hi, this is Kat Patterson for Radio Sherwell. Today I am very privileged to meet Dean Carter, who's been at Oborne Village Hall doing a soundbar session. Dean, can you tell us a little bit about these amazing bowls and what the soundbar session actually involves?
Okay, well, we use crystal and Tibetan bowls. The Tibetan bowls are metal, and the crystal bowls are, as they imply, made of silicon crystals. They're a modern sound healing and sound therapy tool, whereas the Tibetan bowls have been around for a lot longer, and our other sound modality is using the human voice and producing overtones, audible overtones with it, and that's called overtone singing. And what a sound bath involves is rather like you'd expect, perhaps, from the title. You simply come and lie down and allow yourself to be bathed in the sound, which has a specific seeming effect as opposed to kind of normal music or normal musical sounds.
So it works on a vibrational level as well as a sound level.
Yes, well, sound is vibration and vice versa. As I was saying earlier, you're getting a great deal of the sound just from the fact that you're lying on the floor rather than hearing it. So it's like a sort of little massage.
And so it doesn't matter if you've never done it before, you can just, you literally just come, lie down, relax,
that's
and
right.
let the therapy wash over you.
Basically, yes, all you need to do is nothing. It's a lie back and think of England sort of scenario. You don't have to learn anything. You don't have to do anything. In fact, you have to do no thing. You just allow the sound to do the work on you. And, you know, I discovered it. I'd wanted to learn to meditate. I'd wanted to learn, you know, about inner peace and everything. Got nowhere, my mind was too noisy and active, and then just at some point I heard the sound and it just shut me up. It just shut the mental chatter up long enough to sort of go, oh, I wonder if that was in a peace for a minute. And then the chatter started again. But so the sound does all the work. It's a very powerful tool. And then on an energetic level, which might be a bit more esoteric for some people, whatever the person's subjective experience, they often kind of just go to sleep, or they might have an inner journey, or all sorts of interesting and exciting things happen.
Does the group dynamic, is that very powerful as well, or doesn't it really matter? Because you do one-to-one sessions,
don't you? Well, on a sound bath, the group dynamic, in a way, doesn't really happen very much. But the other thing we do is we teach the vocal overtoning techniques, and they're relatively simple, although it's not so, you know, well known yet in the West. And people often find, to their surprise, they can do it with just a little bit of practice. And then, of course, the group dynamic is very strong and builds. So we've got a kind of rolling group, you could even almost say an overtoning choir. And then we get to do exciting things like go out and overtone on sacred sites in the Wessex landscape as well.
Do you do that on the solstice?
Not just the solstice, but around the wheel of the year. So that's both solstices and both equinoxes, and then looking at the quarter days like Imbolc and Beltane, most famous one as well, yeah.
Can you give me a quick demonstration of your overtoning?
Overtoning, sure.
That's an incredible sound. There seems to be lots of things going on there. Is it quite difficult to do?
As I was saying, no, it's less difficult than you think. Basically, every time you sing or play a note, actually, you're producing the whole overtone scale. The only note you normally hear is the root note. It's the loudest.
Yep.
But the musical timbre of any instrument or voice is down to all the other overtones on top. So the vocal overtoning techniques we use that have kind of developed in the West largely are to do with moving your lips and your vocal cavity. And it isn't as difficult as it might seem. Because I'm relatively practiced, I can do quite a long breath as well. So perhaps people might not do a long breath on it yet. People have asked me, am I doing circular breath? But I just have a long breath.
That's the very difficult one.
Whereas, you know, relatively well known to people are the fact that, you know, Tibetan monks can do overtone chanting and Mongolian overtone chanting. Now, these involve much more difficult seeming to me vocal techniques, like, so it was quite a growly, incredibly deep voice.
Yeah, it's such an earthy sound,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Right.
And do they do that sort of during meditation? It's another way of stilling the mind.
Well, yeah, it is a form of meditation, that's right. But having said that, there's only actually two Tibetan colleges that teach that technique, so even within Tibetan Buddhism is quite rare. In Mongolia, they've got about a very long list of types of overtone singing. Again, that it's a little bit higher often, and there's quite a rasp you have to do. But our techniques in the West, as you can hear, no rasping and no sort of sound. And
it might be if I did it.
Which also means ladies can do it as well as gentlemen,
which
is great. Yes.
So how, you know, can I give it a go quickly? Show me how to do this overtoning.
Okay. So the most easy way of thinking about it is, We're gonna stay on one note, and we're gonna move between an E vowel sound and an O vowel sound. So when you make an E sound, your lips are kind of like a very wide, like a letterbox.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so try going E.
E.
E. And find a nice note you'd like to sing. Nice deep breath, and just go.
E.
Good. Okay. Then the oo sound, you'll see really the lips are on a different shape and almost the opposite shape. They're kind of rolled up into a mue. So try going
oo.
Yes. So if you look at yourself in the mirror,
that's a joy.
You'll see, I look really silly.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is all part of the fun.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Gets rid of the ego. So anyway, you'll actually, when you start looking at how we actually produce these sounds, and we do it all the time, we hardly think about it, it's become very unconscious, our use of language, you'll say, okay, so I'm doing two different shapes. So let's try going between oo and ee on a note that you like, as deep a breath as you can do. We do usually do a lot more warm-up and practice and breathing before we dive in like this.
I know, but I'm brave. Or stupid.
And just go between E, somewhere in the middle where you're starting with U sound and then go back to the E sound. That's where the overtones will just sort of pop out.
Okay.
Can you do it on your own, or should I do it with you?
You might have to do it with me.
Okay, if I do it with you, obviously you'll be hearing mine, and I've been practicing. But
I know, but I'll pretend it's mine.
Yeah, okay. But you pick the note, and I'll choose your note.
E.
Some people often, when you first learn it, you almost can't believe you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because often people have never heard overtones from vocal music before. See, overtones happen quite a lot in instrumental music. I'm a guitarist, so you often get it written in. The harmonics are written into the music.
That's true.
So it's just the same thing, really. And then on wind instruments, you can produce overtones by overblowing. I'm told I'm not a wind instrument, but it's exactly the same thing.
Okay.
And the other interesting thing is the overtones come out in this perfectly ordered musical scale called the overtone scale, upon which, hey presto, all other music is based. And that seems to be what Western theory and Western music has lost. It's lost its sight of the fact that there's this kind of, it's actually a kind of archetype embedded within the voice and embedded within music. And when you analyse it, it turns out to be related to everything, the golden mean, every ratio, every proportion you can think of. So it's fascinating how it then ties in with, you know, sacred geometry and architecture and everything else. So we're carrying a complete archetype in our voice, which we don't use,
but
we could do.
Yeah, there's so much we are capable of.
That's right. So when you produce the overtones, even if they're quite faint, you're more in tune than a piano, because pianos are out of tune, I hate to tell everyone. The intervals you're bringing are absolutely perfect. When you produce them through overtone singing, they can't be anything else, because that's the way the laws of the physics works.
How fascinating.
So I think it really helps people attune, especially people, you know, we all think we can't sing and I can't do music and all these other things. And I've seen while working with this technique that people, you know, improves their self-confidence about being able to tone. Even people who are slightly hard of hearing can produce overtones because they can feel the vibrations.
That's incredible.
And they get to, you know, get to let rip. It's a very informal way of singing, and yet you're suddenly in this room full of people producing these kind of angelic harmonies.
Yeah.
Without a single dot in front of you, you know. So it's pretty empowering stuff, I think, for people.
So let's go out to the sound baths.
Yeah.
Can you take me around all these amazing Tibetan bowls and all sorts of exciting looking things?
This one is a large Tibetan dish bowl. Now actually it's producing an audible undertone. So the lowest note you can hear in this one isn't the root note, because as well as the overtone scale going up, the undertone scale goes down in exactly the same. So every time you sing any note, there's like a whole ladder of notes going up on top of it, and there's a whole ladder of notes going down as well that you can't normally hear.
Is it bronze?
Well, they are said to be, or they should be, made of a mixture of the seven sacred metals, all of which relate to the planet. So bronze, copper relate to Venus, for example, and every family is said to have a unique sort of mix, you know, unique kind of combination. So you can get bowls that have a lot more gold, sun energy, silver, moon energy, and cost a lot more.
Yes, exactly. Tin would do me, I think.
So that lower note's an audible undertone. And I even have an image of that, which I don't know if you've ever come across the thing called a chymoscope, where you scatter a powder on a membrane, and as you play a note into it, it'll always take the same shape at a certain pitch.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yes, I'll have to come to one of my talks on this,
because I've got all this.
And so with this one, we managed to get an absolutely perfect circle from the undertone, and the guy who was the lab technician was going, I've never seen that before. That is a picture of a pure sound, and it's a perfect circle, which is, of course, you know, the symbolism of the universe and the Ouroboros and
Do you have to find a bowl that resonates with you, or can you get any old bowl and start playing around?
Well, I think all bowls work, but yes, when you're kind of, you know, sorting through them in the shop, just go for the one that
your intuition
calls to.
Goes
yeah,
to.
That's right.
Yeah.
It might be attuned to your particular, you know, soul note or whatever. Don't think you have to follow any particular regime. It's just something that actually resonates with you. And also, it depends on what happens to Tibetan bowls. Is, as you can hear, you've got the root note, and then overtones and undertones up and down, and you know, it just might be you like that overtone on top of that particular note, and it's resonant for you and pleasant.
So when you're doing the workshop, does it works on your chakras, doesn't it, each
yes.
of these bowls, because you it's like you do a whole performance, isn't it? Obviously you work that out before,
which no one sees because they've all got their eyes shut.
So. Apart from it, I did take a sneaky
peek.
I had to. I'm sorry, when it came to the rattling business.
Yes. Oh, you're a journalist.
I know. There we go. So, can you take me down, make all these lovely sounds these bowls make, just to give a little demonstration? And you light lights, don't you, inside them? How does that help, what does that do?
I also work with the universal directions and the Buddhas and the archangels of the directions and five elements, so the colour symbolism fits in with that.
And is that in relation to your chakras as well?
Yes.
Sort of mauve, blue, red?
That's right. So this is, for example, West, the Buddha Amitabha, the Buddha of infinite light, and the fire element.
Oh, okay.
And
that's a cupcake.
And that's a cupcake. No, that's a candle in a cupcake corner, really.
Don't you? There's that
resonance,
incredible. Ooh.
The other thing I should say is it seems to inevitably, I've kind of inferred that it sort of inevitably kind of arouses the deeper brainwave states that we associate with meditation and so forth, without you, as it were, having to do a meditative technique. It's like the sound of the technique for you.
Easy way out.
Easy way out.
If you've got a very active mind, yeah, that should be the best way for you.
Yeah. Nothing worked until this. I encountered this.
Because you had ME, didn't you?
Yes.
And is this how you actually got better by learning all these techniques?
The sound was my way out. The main part of my healing path. Out of chronic fatigue syndrome, ME.
So these glass ones, are they crystal as well as the clear glass ones?
Yes.
They are.
Yeah, both of those are crystals. So you get them either this frosted white type or the clearer ones. And the interesting thing about the frosted white crystal balls is that they are a byproduct of modern technology. They're the other side of computer technology. Every silicon chip in the world starts life as one of these crystal balls.
I like that.
Yes. And then they're actually made by a industrial process, which is why some, say, Tibetan bowl practitioners look down on crystal balls because, they're just modern. But they work. They're extremely powerful.
They're exactly.
And they started finding that, you actually make the silicon chips from these crystal balls by a kind of acid is dangled down on a thread, and then all the chips flock onto the thread, and the inside of the bowl is eaten away, and then it's smashed and recast and so forth. So it's a totally industrial
That's
process.
Not quite how I thought those chips were made.
And then one day, sort of someone just put a rubber mallet to one and went, and that's actually, other than tuning forks, that's the purest acoustic sound in the world. The crystal bowls don't have an overtone scale on top. They are just, if you put it through an oscilloscope, that'd be a perfectly pure sine wave.
And do Tibetans use the same type of bowl then?
Well, what Tibetans do is they have like when I did vocal overtoning, they have a root note, and then you can hear the overtones on top, sometimes two, sometimes three. So when the overtones are the pure sounds there. So it's all sort of pure sound.
But they don't necessarily use the bowl, they use it vocally.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but the Tibetan monks, yes, well they vocalize with overtoning, and they've developed the bowls as well. So in both areas they've developed pure sound technologies. And is your mic stereo?
Yes.
I could demonstrate even just a beam shell for you, which
that would be good.
It's the little Tibetan little bells. And they're binaural beat technology. They're slightly out from each other. And the best thing you would do with a client was you'd put one over each ear. So is that left and that right?
Yeah.
All right, so.
And it's quite piercing, isn't it?
Yes, yes. It can be quite loud.